This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today is an episode of the Weekly Docket where I recap the headlines in true crime for this week. Now, this week's Weekly Docket covers several stories that have dominated the headlines this week, from a shocking homicide investigation involving one of Hollywood's most recognizable figures to a deadly international terror attack, multiple violent crimes under active investigation, and a mass shooting on a college campus that has left families and communities reeling. I thought I was going to actually take this week off because I did have surgery earlier this week, but because so many stories were dominating the headlines, I thought I gotta just muster this up and get this compiled for you guys so you guys are all in the know. These stories are really shocking, especially this first one. So whether you're on your way to work, doing chores at home, on a walk, whatever you may be doing, thank you for taking me along with you. Now buckle up and let's get into it. On Sunday, December 14th, Rob Reiner, who is 78 years old, and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, who was 70, were found dead inside of their Brentwood home in the 200 block of South Chadbourne Avenue. The LA Fire Department responded to the residents around mid-afternoon, and LAPD began treating it as a homicide investigation right away. Now, by Tuesday, December 16th, the LA County District Attorney's Office publicly identified their son, Nick Reiner, 32 years old, as the defendant in the case, charging him with two counts of murder with a special circumstance allegation of multiple murders plus an allegation that he personally used a knife. Prosecutors say the killings happened in the early morning hours of December 14th and that Nick fled afterward before being arrested later that day. Now, the night before, the Reiners and their son Nick were at a holiday party at Conan O'Brien's house, and there have been some details that have come out that there was allegedly an argument or like an awkward situation at this party. So one detail that investigators have not confirmed yet is the motive, but multiple outlets keep circling back to this party and what happened at this party. So according to reporting from the LA Times, Rob and Nick were at this party where friends said that the two got into kind of an argument, and it was described as loud enough that people noticed and that Nick appeared to be acting strangely. According to thehuffpost.com, Nick was displaying bizarre behavior by interrupting people, including Bill Hader, who is a well-known comedic actor. He, you know, was featured on SNL for years. And I guess Nick was going up to him and saying things like, "What's your name? What's your last name? Are you famous?" And that he kept going to multiple A-listers at that party, asking the same questions, interrupting them while they were in deep conversations, and just being really strange. Now, Nick has struggled with addiction and mental health in the past. And so some people are left to surmise that maybe he was under the influence of something while he was at this party. But apparently his behavior was strange enough that he was eventually asked to leave. So it seems fair to assume that because he was acting oddly and maybe under the influence, that it may have led Rob to get after him either at the party or afterwards, which may have escalated into a violent attack later that night. Another insider later told NBC News that Nick was staring at Bill Hader, before storming off, which is really creepy, especially considering what all happened afterwards. And apparently Rob and Michelle brought Nick to this party so that they could keep an eye on him because they knew he was struggling in his active addiction. And some sources close to the couple, you know how that goes, take it with a grain of salt. But some sources have said that they were at their wit's end with his addiction. According to the LA County District Attorney Nathan Hochman, Rob and Michelle Reiner were killed in the early morning hours of December 15th after that party. Investigative sources tell the Daily Mail that the couple were found in bed with their throats cut and may have been asleep at the time of the attack. Sources say that rigor mortis had begun to set in, suggesting that they had been dead for several hours before they were eventually found. At around 4 a.m. that same day, Nick Reiner checked into the Pierside Santa Monica Hotel using his own credit card. Witnesses later described him as looking tweaked out, and hotel staff, allegedly discovered a shower full of blood with blood trails leading from the bed and a window covered with bed sheets. Later that afternoon at around 3:30 p.m., a massage therapist arrived at the Reiners' home in Brentwood for a scheduled appointment, but they couldn't get inside. So the therapist contacted the couple's daughter, Romy Reiner, who is 27 and who lives across the street. So Romy was able to gain entry into the house, and she unfortunately discovered her father's lifeless body. Apparently, she didn't, according to reports, didn't immediately notice that her mom was also a victim as well. And so she ran out of the home. Her roommate ended up calling 911. And then she called her dad's best friend, or one of his longtime friends, Billy Crystal. Romy also informed the police that Nick had been living on the property in a guest house, but that he wasn't there, which explains why he checked into that hotel. It didn't take too long to track him down, though. By around 9:15 p.m. on Sunday, he was arrested about 15 miles from the Brentwood home at an L.A. metro station in Exposition Park. Video obtained by the New York Post showed multiple unmarked cars surrounding him, and you can see in the video, he just immediately puts his hands up. He doesn't put up any kind of fight, and he surrenders to police. His arraignment has been delayed because his new defense attorney, who is Alan Jackson, who is also the same attorney who represented Karen Reed, if you remember, he wants Nick to undergo like some sort of medical evaluation before they allow for an arraignment. So the arraignment has been postponed until January, but if he is found convicted of these crimes, he could be facing the death penalty. The next story I have for you brings us to Australia. On the evening of Sunday, December 14th, around 6:47 p.m. local time, a mass shooting erupted at a public Hanukkah celebration known as Hanukkah by the Sea at Archer Park, which is adjacent to the iconic Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. The event was attended by hundreds of people who were gathered for the first evening of the Jewish holiday. According to official statements from the New South Wales Police Force, two male gunmen opened fire on the crowd with multiple firearms. Police later said one gunman was killed at the scene by officers, and the other was shot and wounded before being taken into custody in critical condition. Investigators found improvised explosive devices in a vehicle that was linked to the shooters, which were later removed safely by authorities. The attack left 15 civilians dead, including a 10-year-old child and 42 other people injured, with victims ranging in age from children to the elderly. Among the dead were community leaders and longtime residents attending the celebration. The shooting quickly became the deadliest mass shooting in Australia in nearly 30 years and is also being treated as the deadliest terror incident in the nation's modern history. On December 17th, 24-year-old Naveed Akram was formally charged after waking up from a coma in a Sydney hospital where he had been treated for his injuries, and he now faces 59 total charges, including 15 counts of murder, 40 counts of causing harm with intent to murder, and a terrorism charge tied to the incident. Authorities allege the attack was a terrorist attack motivated by anti-Semitism, citing investigators' belief that Akram and the other shooter acted to target Jewish people at this holiday gathering. The second gunman is identified as Akram's 50-year-old father, Sajid Akram, and he was killed by police at the scene during the confrontation. Naveed Akram is expected to appear again in court in April. Now, before I move on, I want to give you a little insight to the people who unfortunately lost their lives during this attack. Matilda Poltavchenko was only 10 years old, a primary school student originally from Ukraine. Matilda was at the Hanukkah by the Sea celebration with her family when the shooting began. Teachers described her as a bright and joyful, spirited child who brought light to those around her, and she was taken to the hospital with critical injuries. However, she later died. Her younger sister was present at the celebration, but she was able to survive the attack. Next was Rabbi Eli Schlanger, who was only 41 years old. He was the assistant rabbi at Chabad of Bondi, and Schlanger helped organize the Hanukkah event and was serving the community for years, many years. He was the father of five, with his youngest child born just weeks before the attack. Alexander, or Alex Clateman, was 87 years old, and he was actually a Holocaust survivor. Originally from Ukraine, he was attending the event with his wife and family, and reports say that he was shot while he was shielding his wife from the gunfire. He and his wife had lived in Australia for decades after surviving World War II. That one just really is so upsetting. I mean, they're all upsetting, obviously, but the fact that he was able to survive the Holocaust and then be killed by these deranged individuals during a Hanukkah celebration is just too much to even fathom. Dan Elkayam, a French national living in Australia, was at the festival with other community members when he was killed. He was involved in local soccer, playing for Rochdale Illenden FC, and had been working in Sydney since at least late 2024. Tiber Whiteson was 78 years old, a member of the local Chabad synagogue, and was attending the Hanukkah event with his family. Reports describe him as a beloved grandfather figure who lost his life shielding loved ones during the attack. Marika Pogani was 82 years old, a Slovak citizen, and a longtime volunteer in the Jewish community. Marika was also killed. She had been active in charity work and service organizations, including delivering kosher meals and supporting other older residents. Rabbi Yaakov Levitan, I'm so sorry if I'm mispronouncing any of these names, but Rabbi Levitan was senior in synagogue leadership, serving as the secretary of the Sydney Beth Din. He came to the event as part of the community and was unfortunately killed in the shooting. Reuven Morrison was a Chabad community member who had lived in both Melbourne and Sydney. His family described him as a businessman who was committed to charity and community support. And lastly, Peter Meager was a retired NSW detective and rugby club volunteer. Meager was attending the Hanukkah celebration and working as a freelance photographer when he was fatally shot. His club described him as a longtime volunteer and a well-known local figure. Now, there has been a lot of coverage on this story because so many people were able to get footage of the incident and multiple perspectives and aspects of the attack. So one of them actually came from the very beginning of the attack when Sophia and Boris Gurman, who are two North Bondi locals, attempted to stop one of the shooters because they noticed that his silver Hyundai had a homemade black Islamic State flag draped over the windscreen of the vehicle. So they kind of stopped and, you know, observed what was going on, and they saw this father and son get out of their car and then seize these weapons. And so this couple, who happened to be Russian and Jewish, were walking along Campbell Parade, and they, you know, witnessed these two come out of their car and they did not hesitate. They tackled one of them onto the road, disarming the 50-year-old and then forcing the rifle from his hands. And then as others hid behind a bus stop, Boris picked up Akram's rifle, aiming it at his assailant as other cars drove by. And drivers were seemingly unaware of what was really going on. So a lot of this is like dash cam footage, and you can just see this like struggle. Obviously, nobody could have known what was about to unfold, you know, but the footage shows that Boris momentarily had the upper hand, threatening Akram with his own gun while his wife Sophia was trying to force the other gunman to retreat. After that, the footage kind of cuts off, and what we understand now is that they might have pulled out another weapon, and unfortunately, the shooters shot the couple at close range. So Boris and Sophia, who had been married for 34 years, ultimately died in each other's arms. Another innocent bystander was Ahmed Al-Ahmed, who disarmed Sajid, who I believe is the son, just meters away from where the Germans were killed. And then this other man, Reuven Morrison, was actually throwing bricks at Sajid as he was going towards this bridge. So there's like a lot of footage of the father and son on this bridge. Ahmed is actually being hailed as a hero. He was shot 5 times in his left arm. He's currently recovering from surgery at St. George Hospital. But his migration lawyer actually said, quote, "He's not well at all. He's riddled with bullets. Our hero is struggling at the moment," end quote. But heartbreakingly, Reuven Morrison, who was throwing bricks at Sajid, was unfortunately killed while he was trying to protect his community from the gunman. He was completely unarmed and charged towards these shooters. I mean, that is about as brave as it gets. Now, as of the time of this recording, which is December 18th, the death toll from the attack is at 16, where 14 have actually died at the scene and then 2 were at the hospital. So I don't want to get my numbers wrong. I guess it kind of depends on when you're listening to this, but 42 people were injured, including the other gunman and then 4 children who were taken to the hospital. So as of today, December 18th, 17 people remain in the hospital, and you know, who knows what kind of charges or like repercussions are going to come from this. But unfortunately, Australia does not have the death penalty, so the harshest punishment that this guy could probably receive is life in prison with no chance of parole. Our next story is another international one from Greater Manchester, England. On December 8th, 29-year-old Jana Bavalova, a mother of 2 young daughters, Adelina and Kate, did not show up to pick them up from their babysitter in Altrincham, which is in Greater Manchester, something those who knew her said that she would never normally do. So when she failed to arrive, friends and family became alarmed and reported her missing to police. 2 days later, on the morning of December 10th, local emergency responders recovered her body from the Bridgewater Canal near Altrincham at about 8:30 a.m. The discovery prompted an immediate investigation by Greater Manchester Police into the circumstances surrounding her death. Bavalova was known by friends and family and co-workers as a devoted single mother who worked as a hotel cleaner to support her family. People who knew her described her as quiet, kind, and hardworking, and someone who was very deeply committed to her 2 children. Police have not released details publicly about the official cause or manner of her death. As of the latest reports, and investigators with Greater Manchester Police say that they are still working to determine exactly what happened. So no arrests have been confirmed in connection with her disappearance or death at this point. So now we are left to wonder if this was a tragic accident or something more sinister. So if new details emerge, I'll be sure to let you know. The reason I chose to tell this story is because I feel like these stories are becoming more frequent where people, and I'm not saying that this is definitely an accident, but if it is an accident, it seems like these accidents keep happening where people are either falling or maybe they're inebriated. I'm not saying that Jana was, but they're walking close to these waterways and then they stumble and fall into these waterways and succumb to an accidental drowning. So I guess it's just worth noting that, you know, if you are walking alone outside near waterways, to be extra careful because, you know, if you were to fall and hit your head, and you know, become knocked out even for a moment, it could cost you your entire life. Have you ever felt like no matter how much you rest, you're still just running on empty? Fatigue, brain fog, even brittle nails, those can all be signs of iron deficiency. And here's the thing, iron deficiency is way more common than people realize. It affects about 1 in 3 adults, especially women, and traditional iron supplements usually don't cut it. They're hard to absorb, and they often leave you dealing with nausea, constipation, or a metallic-y taste. That's why I recommend Citerol from PharmaNutra. Citerol is a premium iron supplement made with patented sucrosomial technology, which basically wraps the iron in a protective shield so your body can absorb it 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And the best part is it's gentle on the stomach. There's no nausea, no constipation, and no metallic taste. Citerol has been clinically studied, over 150 published studies, in fact, and it's trusted by more than 2 million people worldwide. It's Italy's number one supplement brand and is finally available here in the U.S. Just one capsule a day with water anytime, with or without food, and you're good to go. So if you're nodding along because you're exhausted, foggy, or just tired of feeling tired, this could be exactly what you've been missing. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order of Citerol. That's pharmanutra-us.com with the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, for 10% off today.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Now next, a man is charged with murder after neighbors say they watched him drag a body through an apartment building. According to a press release from the Richfield, Minneapolis Police Department, numerous calls came into their dispatch center at around 3:12 a.m. on Saturday, December 13th. These calls were reporting that a man was dragging a dead body out of the apartment complex and into a vehicle. One witness was a woman who said that she saw this man carrying a female covered in blood and that she told the man to stop, but he continued outside. When authorities arrived, they found evidence of a violent, bloody struggle, and traces of blood led them to an apartment where they discovered another large amount of blood on the carpet, wall, and entryway. Once officers started putting the pieces together, they discovered that the apartment belonged to 25-year-old Yusuf Ali Salat. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but they identified his car. So once they found his car, they spotted it speeding and running through a red light. So eventually, Yusuf stopped at the emergency department at Fairview Southdale, which is a hospital, and they removed her body from the back seat and declared her dead on arrival. The victim, who has been unnamed as of yet, was only 23 years old. Officers also spoke with other residents of the apartment, and one witness recalled that he had been asleep when he heard pounding on his door. According to the probable cause, quote, when witness one opened the door, he said he saw a woman lying on the floor who did not respond to his questions. Witness one reported then hearing a man banging on the window and then dragging the woman up the stairs and stuffed her into a vehicle, end quote. The probable cause statement claims Salat said that the victim shot herself. However, an autopsy determined that the victim was shot once in the back of her shoulder and the bullet went through her liver. Outside in the snow, authorities found a Glock 9mm and they also found a 9mm magazine in a trash bag on the balcony. So as of now, he is charged with murder in the second degree without intent while committing a felony and first degree possession of 50 grams or more of cocaine or methamphetamine after drugs were also found in the apartment. In a cabinet above the refrigerator, officers say they recovered two packages containing approximately 445 grams of field-tested positive marijuana and 440 grams of presumed marijuana. His bail is set at $500,000, and his next court appearance is scheduled for Wednesday, December 17th, according to his booking record. Next is a story that I'm seeing all over social media, and this is really just so insane. Like, talk about completely throwing your entire life away. The story I'm about to tell you is about a former college football coach who is facing serious domestic violence and stalking charges, and newly released court records are now shedding light on this relationship that prosecutors say had been volatile for years. Now, a quick background on Sherrone Moore. He was the University of Michigan's head football coach. He had played college football in the past as well, and he's only 39 years old. He succeeded Jim Harbaugh as head coach in 2024 until his termination after the regular season in 2025. He once played as an offensive guard at the University of Oklahoma from 2006 to 2007. Then he was an assistant coach at the University of Louisville before moving on to Central Michigan University until 2017. And then Moore first joined the Michigan Wolverines coaching staff in 2018 as the tight ends coach. He was then promoted to co-offensive coordinator and offensive line coach in 2021 before eventually becoming the head coach. In January of 2024, he agreed to a five-year, $27.5 million contract to be the head coach of their football team. He was the first African-American to be hired as head coach at the University of Michigan. And in his first season, he led the Michigan Wolverines to an 8-5 record on the year, including wins over Michigan State, Ohio State, and Alabama. He was the first Michigan head coach since Benny Oosterbaan, I don't know if I'm saying that right, in 1948 to defeat Michigan State in his first year. Behind closed doors, he was married to his wife, Kelly. They actually got married in 2015. They have three daughters together. And so you would really think that this guy has it all. He, you know, was successful as a player in college. He carried that through into his adulthood. Like, what more could you possibly ask for out of life? Well, apparently Sherrone Moore found some things to ask for, and that involved an extramarital relationship, among other things. Shortly after becoming head coach, he came under fire for allegations that he was involved in sign stealing. And so the NCAA had written this draft, essentially opening up this investigation to see if he was involved in some sort of sign stealing, which I don't even actually know what that means. Okay, so I had to ask Austin what this meant. He is way more knowledgeable about sports than I am. And of course, I thought sign stealing, like, are we stealing signs that say Michigan on them? Like, that's where my mind went, but that's actually not right at all. So if you're not aware of what sign stealing is, it's essentially a form of cheating where you begin to recognize or read patterns in the signals that coaches and players are making to each other that kind of signal what kind of plays they're going to make. So the NCAA opened up this investigation and I guess when they went to investigate Sherrone's phone, he deleted over 50 text messages, which is obviously not exactly like the move of an innocent person. It's kind of suspicious. Now, the NCAA does not have rules against stealing signs, but it does prohibit schools from sending scouts to the games of future opponents and using electronic equipment to record another team's signals. So this actually happened when Harbaugh was the coach and Sherrone Moore was the assistant coach, and they allegedly sent a staffer, Connor Stallions, to games that involved future opponents. So once the NCAA started investigating this, they tried to seize Sherrone's phone, and he had deleted a ton of his messages with Connor Stallion. So obviously that looks pretty suspicious. Now, one might think that once you've gotten that close to losing everything you've built, that you might choose to act maybe a little more appropriate, more professional, with maybe a little more moral character, something to that effect. But Sharon actually doubled down on his bad behavior. And according to police and court records, he had been involved in a long-term extramarital relationship with a woman who also worked within the university's athletic department. Investigators say the relationship deteriorated over time and that when the woman attempted to end contact, Sharon Moore allegedly began showing up to her place uninvited, sending repeated messages, and then making statements that caused her to fear for her safety. Police say the situation escalated in late November when Moore allegedly went to the woman's home without permission, and according to the probable cause statement, he banged on her doors and windows before eventually barging into her home and refusing to leave when he was told to do so. The victim told authorities that he barged into her home with tears in his eyes, allegedly grabbing two knives out of her drawer and pointing them at her, saying, quote, "You ruined my life. You ruined my life," end quote. He kept inching closer and closer to her, so she tried calling for help. And at that point, he turned the knives around on himself, pointing them at his neck and saying that, quote, "I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to make you watch. My blood is on your hands. You ruined my life," end quote. During the investigation, detectives uncovered what they described as a pattern of behavior. Court records cite prior allegations of domestic violence during the relationship, including claims that Moore had been physically aggressive in the past. A detective testified that the woman reported feeling intimidated and afraid, particularly given Moore's size, status, and repeated attempts to reinsert himself into her life after she asked him to stop. He was arrested and charged with stalking and domestic violence-related offenses. Prosecutors allege his conduct met the legal threshold for a pattern of unwanted contact that caused emotional distress and fear rather than just a misunderstanding or isolated argument. After the arrest became public, the University of Michigan placed Moore on administrative leave and later confirmed that he is no longer employed by the university. School officials declined to comment on the specifics of the case, and Moore has not entered a public plea at this time. His attorney has pushed back on the allegations, of course, suggesting that the situation has been mischaracterized and will be addressed in court. Now, get this. Moore had a contract with the school that included a $12.3 million guarantee over the next 3 years, but because of his conduct, it voided the contract, and now he is out all that money. So he's truly destroyed every aspect of his life, his marriage, his family, his relationships, his career, his reputation, his bank account, all of it. And now he's just nothing but a big-time loser. Our last story for this episode comes out of Providence, Rhode Island, where a mass shooting took place at Brown University on December 13th. It was finals week at the university as students were finishing up their semester and likely making plans to head home for the holidays. During a review session in preparation for finals, a gunman walked into one of the school buildings and opened fire, killing two students and injuring at least nine others. It was about 4:05 p.m. local time when the single gunman shot 11 people in the Brown University's School of Engineering Barrison Hawley building, which also houses the school's physics department. The building was unlocked, which is really not that surprising given the nature of the school period, but it seems like the shooter was quite familiar with the building because he navigated areas that had minimal surveillance cameras. And that is something that has come under fire, the fact that there was maybe a little lax in security or surveillance cameras on the campus. The two students who were killed are Ella Cook, a parishioner at Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, and vice president of Brown's College Republicans. She was a sophomore and known for her bold, brave, and kind heart as she served her chapter and her fellow classmates. Ella was studying French and mathematics economics. In her obituary, her family said, quote, "Ella was known for her wide array of interests, from being with her precious friends, to babysitting so many children who were special to her, to teaching young people in Bible studies, Sunday school, and academic subjects. Ella dearly loved children. In fact, she believed her highest calling would one day to be to have children of her own. She had a love for piano, dance, spending time outdoors in Hale County, and traveling anywhere, especially where French is spoken," end quote. The second victim is Mukhammad Aziz Umurzokov, a recent graduate of Midlothian High School in Chesterfield County, Virginia. He was just a freshman at Brown studying biochemistry and neuroscience. When he was shot, he was at the school helping a friend during a review session for an economics final. His sister told the Associated Press that her brother had suffered a neurological condition when he was a kid that required surgery and that he later had to use a back brace due to scoliosis. But his adversity made him determined and driven to succeed, validated by his acceptance into the Ivy League school. Samira Umurzakova also said that their family immigrated from Uzbekistan to the United States when they were young. The American Uzbekistan Association said in a post on social media, quote, "Mukhammad Aziz was known for his sharp intellect, kind heart, and quiet willingness to help anyone in need. He carried himself with humility and compassion, earning the respect and affection of those around him. His curiosity, discipline, and generosity reflected both his character and the values of the community that raised him." Now, at the time of this recording, the shooter is actually still on the run. The FBI announced that the suspect is approximately 5'8" with a stocky build. They have released a video from nearby surveillance in a neighborhood that shows a man walking on the sidewalk wearing a mask and a hood. There's really nothing identifiable about these pictures or videos, which I'm sure is causing a lot of unrest in the area because this guy is obviously still on the loose. Providence's top cop said that the person wearing dark clothes seen in video footage shared by the FBI is more than just a person of interest in the shooting. They also said, quote, "There's a lot of leads we have here that show the person who committed this tragedy is the guy in the video," but the chief did not say what other leads point to the person in the video footage. Witnesses said the person was probably in his 30s, and it was unclear if the person was affiliated with Brown University. Hopefully by next week, I'll have some answers for you regarding this case. Hopefully they will find him by then. But man, I can't imagine how terrifying it would be to live in that area. That is it for today's weekly docket. Next week is Christmas, so I hope you all have a wonderful, beautiful holiday season with your families, your loved ones. Hug each other tight, enjoy these moments, rest in these moments, and you know, try to stay off social media, try to stay off the true crime. Really enjoy the beauty that lays in these holiday moments and these seasons. With that said, I will not have a new episode next week. I'm going to spend it with my family, so I'll be back after that. And until then, stay vigilant, stay curious. Mama Mystery out.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.